If you enjoy podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Highway to Health podcast, hosted by Jeremy Quinby, provides guidance, quality resources, and inspiration for anyone seeking wellness in mind, body, and spirit. There's an episode that you should check out called The Value of Our Emotions, where Jeremy helps listeners understand the role emotions serve and what we can learn about our present state by staying attuned to them. Check out Highway to Health podcast on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.
Millions of us, including me at times, are turning to online sources for health information. But how do you sift through the myths, advice, and personal stories, especially in women's health, where misinformation often fills the gaps? One of the most popular, if not the most popular, sources for health information is YouTube, with 30 million people per day searching for health information. In an effort to address the challenge of helping consumers find the most credible information, YouTube Health was created. Hi, welcome to Beyond the Paper Gown. I'm Dr. Mitzi Crockover. Today, we're going to learn more about not only YouTube Health, but we'll also discuss the tools you can use to judge and use online health content effectively. And who better to talk about this with but a top physician creator and the head of YouTube Health UK. I'd like to welcome Dr. Simi Adedigi, who is a physician in the UK. She's a family physician, and she's also a significant health content creator for YouTube and YouTube Health with over a million subscribers, and very excited to have her, as well as Dr. Vishal Virani, who is head of YouTube Health in the UK. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Great. So Vishal, we'll start with you. Tell us what YouTube Health is, and also what your role is there.
Sure. Thank you, Mitzi. So YouTube Health is an initiative with the objective of making it easier for viewers across the world to access authoritative health information on YouTube. And so we have launched health some product features and some partnerships that enable viewers to get a little bit more context on the content that they are consuming on the platform. And hopefully they get to consume content coming from expert sources like Dr. Simi and others as well.
So just so we can be clear, is there a difference between YouTube Health and the general YouTube channels?
No, there isn't actually. And that's the beauty of it. So the YouTube platform touches so many people across the world, and individuals are spending so much time on YouTube. There is an incredible opportunity to provide them with health information, education, to empower them, whether they are managing chronic diseases, whether they have relatives that are unwell, whether they want to prevent ill health. And so as part of their daily consumption habits on YouTube, we want to include health content within that. And so we have layered on some product features to the core YouTube experience that will help those who are searching for health content specifically.
Talk a little bit more in detail about those features, if you would.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you search for any health topic on YouTube, at the top of the search results, you will now see a shelf that's labeled from health sources. So that video, that shelf specifically contains videos coming from authoritative sources. And so we've been working with various health institutions around the world, with individual healthcare professionals, with health charities and other health organizations in order to populate those shelves with high quality health information. And each of the channels that are included in those shelves will also have a label against their channel, which says, this is a channel from a licensed doctor, from a licensed nurse. This is a channel from an organization with a licensed health professional. And so this is the kind of the signal that we then give to viewers that they are consuming content from an expert source. And so what we've now been doing is spending a lot of time working with those various different expert sources around the world in order to encourage them to create more content on the platform, to make that content as engaging as possible, and then also to target some of the content gaps that we've identified on the platform. There are certain topic areas in particular where there is a lack of authoritative information. And so we've been encouraging more and more content creation from expert sources in those areas.
And you head up YouTube Health UK. Can folks from other parts of the world also access this information?
This is a global initiative, and the features are available globally, and we try to make the content available based on the language that you're searching in, available to all viewers around the world.
And Simi, you do have quite a following, and I had the pleasure of taking a look at many of your clips, and you are so engaging and you make information so accessible. Talk to me a little bit about how you came to create the health content and why you wanted to do that.
So I really started creating content online sort of because I was getting increasingly frustrated with the conversations that I was seeing, particularly around women's health and skin health. So I was finding that some of these conversations were sort of shrouded in shame, blame, sometimes ridicule. So you know, you could see from the comments that were sometimes being passed on certain videos that some of these women were being made fun of. And I really felt that there was a lot that I had to add to the conversation in terms of accuracy of the information that was being given, and also trying to make these topics more understandable. So it's not always the case that, you know, the woman has done something wrong when she has certain signs or symptoms. And also there was some degree of self-blame there as well. So women were blaming themselves and thinking that perhaps there was a problem with how they were living their lives that was causing them these symptoms. And that wasn't actually always the case. Similarly with skin health, I was finding that there were also some inaccuracies. So for example, there were conversations around laser hair removal and its suitability for darker skin tones. So there was this misconception that if you had darker skin, that you couldn't have laser hair removal because laser wouldn't be suitable for you. Or there were certain misconceptions around acne and the causes of acne. So I felt that I had the necessary kind of skills, and I wanted to add my voice into the mix.
And, you know, reading the comments, you have a lot of grateful listeners and viewers. It was very heartwarming to see some of their comments, and because they obviously couldn't get the information somewhere else. You know, as a physician influencer, I'm sure you feel a big responsibility to have accurate information and up-to-date information. So how do you ensure that you have the most up-to-date information?
So a lot of it has to do with me continuing to practice medicine as a doctor, because there are some sort of requirements that are built into the structure of that. So by that, I mean the annual appraisal, for example, where you have to demonstrate that you are up to date with, you know, the information that you need to practice safely as a doctor and to keep your patients safe. And also some of the local teaching that's arranged regionally to keep you up to date. Then there are other things as well. So reading around the topics, peer-reviewed journals, looking at the guidance, whether that's, you know, national guidance or local guidance, keeping abreast of what's happening in the popular news, for example, to see what's topical and what the audience is concerned about in terms of their health. And the other thing is making sure that you're looking at guidance from places like the World Health Organization. So just really making sure that the information that I'm giving to my audience is as accurate as possible.
So Vishal, you know, what Simi just described is obviously very conscientious. How do you at YouTube Health ensure that the information from other physicians, for example, is as, or that they are as conscientious as Simi?
So there's multiple different approaches that we take to this. And so first and foremost, those health features that I described to you involve a multi-step process in order to secure the eligibility, the validation, secure the eligibility it requires to then be validated on the platform and receive the label against your channel. And so you have to be a qualified practicing clinician, doctor, nurse, or psychologist, submit your license details, the photo of your license front and back, and prove that you're currently practicing. You then also have to submit your channel for a review. And so we will review every channel and check for any previous misinformation against that channel. So we have a series of medical misinformation policies, and content which violates those policies is then removed by our various systems, a combination of an algorithm and medical doctors in the loop who are reviewing all the content. And so if content violates those policies, it gives us a transparent and objective means by which to remove content. And so that is done on an individual video by video basis for all content that is uploaded onto the platform. We then also ask all organizations and individuals applying to self-attest against a set of health information standards that the Academy of Medical Royal Colleges in the UK put together alongside the NHS, General Medical Council, and various other stakeholders. And so these principles include things like having to cite the evidence base behind the content that you are sharing, having to declare any conflicts of interest, having a documented process for how you create content.
You and I met this summer at a women's health conference in London, and you were presenting this new initiative. It was very exciting. And as you know, I had just come from Basel, another women's health conference that was organized by FemTechnology. And I led a workshop on how women get their information and how we can improve it. And, you know, I came across, as I was researching the topic, some really, I don't know, startling statistics. So let me just read them to you. 40% of users do not have the skills to critically assess online content. Nearly two-thirds of adult social media users who felt confident in judging whether online content is true or false actually lacked the skills to do so. And another report showed that 30% of adults did not know or did not consider the potential truthfulness of online information at all. And 6% believe that all the information they find online is truthful. And 34% of 16 to 24-year-olds think that if websites have been listed by a search engine, that's what I was referring to, they will contain accurate and unbiased information. And so what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so that's some really interesting statistics and quite startling in a way. But you know, I think it highlights multiple different issues. But one of the big ones is the importance of the work that we are doing as YouTube Health, and then hopefully the same work that other online platforms sharing health information are also or will also be doing, to the responsibility that we have to our viewers to ensure that the content that is available on our platforms is accurate, is credible, is coming from expert sources, because as you have very clearly outlined, our viewers are not always aware of the provenance of the content, the veracity of the content. And why should they be aware with some types of health content, for example, where they don't actually know truth from misconception or what has an evidence base behind it versus what doesn't? You know, that is for the experts to try to evaluate and then share with these individuals. And so, you know, I think it highlights that point, but then it also highlights the work that we have to do collectively as a society to upskill ourselves in evaluating the information that we are consuming online. And so I think there needs to be a lot of work done at every level of society when children are going to school, at primary school level, at secondary school level, at universities. They need to be taught how to evaluate different types of information and make a judgment call on that information. And you know, we as YouTube are doing some of that work. We have a channel on the platform called Hit Pause, which is sharing a lot of digital literacy content with viewers, trying to upskill them. But also, I think that the third issue that it highlights is the challenge that we face, because there are some people out there who are actively looking for that which is controversial, that which is going against the grain, going against the sort of the public, the mainstream view. And so there is a balancing act where we need to allow all different perspectives on a topic to be available on our platform, whilst also cutting out that which is clearly misinformation. And so we also have to acknowledge that different people are looking for different things, and we need to try to provide that full range and spectrum of perspectives and try to hold our content creators, especially when it comes to health content, to as high a standard as possible when they're creating that content, but, you know, whilst not constraining the types of topics or the types of points of view that they take on a topic.
And Simi, again, I was looking at the comments on some of your posts, and it was really interesting because it does, there were some other studies that really reflected the same thing I was seeing, and that was people saying, I never learned this. Nobody ever told me. My mom didn't tell me about this. And you talk about, you know, some very sensitive issues, especially with respect to gynecologic and women's health. What has been your experience? What do you see as gaps in women's health information?
So I think that there are gaps across the board. So if I would start, for example, with gaps in the knowledge of physicians, I think that we could do a better job of introducing women's health to physicians at medical school and kind of just increasing the exposure.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So that's a big one. I think there's also a knowledge gap amongst members of the audience. So that's where I come in terms of my content and how I try to explain certain conditions to women. And it's not always conditions, actually. It could be how our bodies work, or, you know, how our hormones function, why we have periods, what happens with periods. So it's not always about the disease state when there's a problem, if you like. It can just be simple questions. Why does this happen when I have this condition? Or why do I feel like this at certain times of the month? So I think there's a gap there as well. Then research. I think that we need a lot more focus on research to do with women's health conditions, and also funding for conditions that affect women.
I so resonate with you, because that's why I started this podcast, for all those reasons that you talked about and all those factors that impact on women's health that may not be obviously evident. So, and it's really interesting, you're coming from it from across the pond, and it's no different, it sounds like, than what we're dealing with here in the United States, maybe a little bit more political tension, if you will, that has also had to add to the mix.
I actually see a role for organizations as well. So there are several organizations now that are really doing great work to draw attention to this gap that we see in women's health education. So, for example, endometriosis, which is relatively common and so few women know about it. And actually, once you've heard what the symptoms are, you could probably think, either for yourself or somebody, you know, that you know, a relative, a friend, who you might think, actually, that person might have endometriosis. So they also, I think they also play a really huge part in highlighting these conditions, so that basically raising the awareness about these conditions.
You know, as a physician, I used to have patients coming in and saying, you know, I did this search, you know, and this is what I had. And I loved that, because that gave me an opportunity to speak with the patient about whether or not that really does resonate with what they have or why it didn't. I know some physicians, because of time constraints, find that somewhat annoying. But in any case, what is your hope in terms of how, once people listen to your content or any other content, use that information in their own health and healthcare?
So I actually don't mind when patients come to me and say, I've seen this. I take it as a very positive thing. It means that they're engaged. It means that they are really kind of invested in their health and they want to take the conversation forward. I had a scenario actually where I did have somebody who had watched one of my videos, and she was coming with symptoms of thrush, or which is a vaginal yeast infection. And, you know, she'd already watched the video, and we were able to have a really useful discussion, because she came in and said, do you know what? I've seen the videos. I'm actually quite informed, and I've tried the over-the-counter things and they haven't worked. And I'd actually like to progress onto something prescription. So it meant that I didn't start that consultation talking to her about things that she already knew and had already tried. And I was able to make, you know, the best use of that time that we had together. As you say, sometimes time is quite limited in consultations. So that was really helpful.
Vishal, I heard your TEDx talk where you talked about patient empowerment and why that's so important. What is your hope for how, not only for YouTube Health, but in general health information to be used to equalize the power dynamics, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's significant potential across the spectrum of kind of entry points into sort of maintaining or preventing and then maintaining, optimizing your health. So there's a massive opportunity, first of all, on the preventative, in the preventative space. The content on YouTube and, you know, other places as well around how to exercise, how to eat well, how to sleep well are incredibly empowering, because those are very practical, actionable tips that you are able to consume, put into practice in your life, and really make a difference to the quality of life that you have and the kind of the health that you will have hopefully long term. So that's one big opportunity. A second big opportunity for me is on the chronic disease side. And you know, you as a chronic disease patient, you spend more than 99% plus of your time outside of the four walls of the clinic, and so you cannot assume or depend upon the clinician to solve all of your problems. So again, there, I think that listening, for example, to people's lived experiences of a particular condition, how they cope and manage with that condition, what lifestyle changes they have made, can be really powerful and influential on how you manage your disease. And so a lot of that can be consumed via video content, for example. And then the third area, I think, is in terms of just encouraging people who do need to seek help to actually find the right type of health. And actually, in this day and age, people are either embarrassed about certain topics, or they feel they are too busy to take action, or they feel that they are scared about a particular procedure. You know, these are all the types of emotions that may come to you when you are needing to access healthcare for a particular problem that you're facing and you're worried about. And there's so much that health videos on YouTube and other places online can do to help address those issues.
I think those points that Vishal has mentioned are really important. The shame that I think that women experience around these topics can be potentially harmful, because I think if you feel a sense of shame, you are less likely to approach your doctor or anybody else to discuss this, to even get to the point where you realise that other people also suffer from the same conditions. And if you feel that there is going to be some element of judgment applied to you, either by the healthcare professional or by society, again, you are less likely to present. And I think that's where it's really important to have information that's delivered in a non-judgmental way, because you are much more likely to seek help early before whatever condition it is progresses. And it could just be that actually the things that you're experiencing are normal, and it's a case of helping you to, you know, reduce the anxiety that you might have around something that's actually completely normal.
As you're speaking, I absolutely agree. And I kind of remember being in medical school and having medical studentitis, where everything that we learned, all of a sudden, every symptom that I had, you know, was that disease of the day. And so I think a lot of people, when they go online, get very scared because, again, they don't have the background to discern, and they're, you know, they have their emotions. So, you know, I think there's a balance. And I think to your point, perhaps, well, let me ask you, how would you address that with folks in terms of, you know, not getting ahead of themselves?
I think if I had to sort of simplify it, I would say, look at who is giving you that information, and what sort of training or education, you know, have they had to allow them to be able to give you that kind of information. And also, what is the information that they're giving you? You know, does it apply some logic? Does it sound sensible? Does it sound, you know, like something that you should be doing? And also, why are they giving you that information? So why is that information there? Is it because it's trying to educate you? Is it trying to give you a sense of ownership over your symptoms? Or are they trying to sell you something or direct you somewhere? You know, are they trying to exploit some of those insecurities that you might already have? And also making sure that you understand that this information is there to support your education, and it's not medical advice. So you would still need to go and see your doctor. And this really is the best way to kind of make sure that those worries or concerns that you have about your health are dealt in a way that's tailored to you. Because we know that there's so many nuances, aren't there, in terms of when we give medical advice, which we can only do in a consultation. But online, it's really about the education. And then you can take that education and have a really informed discussion about your health with your doctor that's tailored to you, because your doctor knows you well, and that you can then, you know, act on.
That's so key. And both of you talked a little bit about seeing how other people are experiencing maybe their symptoms or how they're dealing with their conditions. So Vishal, that is very useful, but it also brings up the question about privacy. So what do consumers need to know about that? And maybe how does YouTube Health deal with some of those issues?
I think that in this day and age where if you put something online, anyone and everyone could see it, you have to be comfortable that what you are sharing is suitable for the public domain. And actually, you know, by and large, I think that the things that one may share about their condition are incredibly valuable, and they don't have to go into revealing any specifics about your identity. I mean, the way that YouTube is set up, you don't even have to use your own name for your channel. There are lots of different approaches that you can take on YouTube and to sort of kind of protect what you would like to protect. So, yeah, I wouldn't say there's anything specific we're doing as YouTube Health, but I think that YouTube as a platform allows quite a range of different content creators to share their expertise and their insights and their layperson's experiences as a layperson without necessarily having to share things that they maybe don't want to share.
Simi, did you have something to add to that?
Just something very similar to what Vishal has said, which is that the member of the audience doesn't have to use their real name. So they often use nicknames or maybe some, you know, name that has particular significance to them. So actually, when they are sharing whatever experience it is that they're sharing, it's not always possible to identify who that individual is.
So if you had some general advice for consumers with respect to how to the best place or places to get information, how to evaluate if that information is either relevant or credible?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I'll say is, you know, what one of the points I was making previously, that different types of content in terms of formats, in terms of perspectives, in terms of the individual or organization sharing that information will resonate most strongly with different people. And so I do think that the first thing that you should do when you're looking for information online is find those sources that you can really connect with. Because the beauty of consuming information online, and especially video content online, is that you don't have to read the leaflet from the local hospital that you were handed. You know, that there is a wealth of choice, and find what works for you. But then once you have found that, try to do, and I suppose specifically, if anything with health content, it's a lot easier than other things. But actually what you can do is say, okay, well, this is the name of the individual, this name of the organization sharing this information. I'm going to look them up online. And so there are various places, for example, the General Medical Council register online, where you can enter a doctor's name and you can see if they are actually a doctor, whether they have a...
And that's UK specific.
Yes.
Excuse me for interrupting.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, this type of principle will exist all over the world, that as a healthcare professional, you have to have some type of licensure which can then be validated and looked up online. So, you know, that's one thing. If it's an organization, you look them up, and, you know, they will have some type of website which will help you understand, for example, are they a regulated healthcare provider? So in the UK, we've got the Care Quality Commission, but in the US, it'll be equivalent. All of these healthcare providers will be regulated. And so that's another thing that you can do as well. I think that you can then also look at, the about page is quite useful on YouTube specifically, but I think it will exist elsewhere. People are, if they are experts, they are usually quite keen to make clear what their qualifications are. So whether that's the titles after their name, whether that's the university that they attended, whether that's the hospital they're currently working at, or the subspecialty that they're focused on, then I think that, you know, they're very keen to share all of that. And then I would say, you know, you would just watch the content and does it make sense to you or not? And, you know, talk to your relatives, your friends about it, whoever you do have in your network, at least get that second, third, fourth opinion about a particular topic. And then the last thing I would say is that there's spectrums, there's content which, even if it's incorrect, but it is not going to cause harm. But then I think you have to recognize that content, which, if incorrect, inaccurate, is going to cause harm because actually it's pushing you to take a certain action or make a certain intervention in your life or with your healthcare that is harmful. You would then probably want to then go and speak to your actual doctor. Hopefully everyone watching content online still has their actual doctor, the likes of Dr. Simi, who they can go and then speak to in the clinic and say, hey, doctor, I read this. Is this true or not? You don't want to bother with your local doctor with all of the things you've seen online. But when you think that it might actually lead to quite a big change you're going to make in your life, I think you should definitely sense check that with an actual medical professional.
Simi, did you want to also comment on that?
Yeah, I think I'll just add to that it can be quite helpful to develop a sense of maybe what you would see as red flags. So things that would kind of, you know, ring that alarm bell in your head, if you like, as to whether this content is something that you can trust. And I would say, in particular, when it comes to health, if you are seeing content that looks quite prescriptive, so it's telling you what to do, how to do it, when to do it, I think that can be a little bit of an alarm bell because, you know, health is as much of an art as it is a science, that there is no one size fits all. So it's very difficult to give health information that will apply to every single person who's watching that health information. So I think if there doesn't seem to be any nuance in the information that's been given, you know, and that would probably, you know, I would say make you a little bit suspicious about what's been told to you. And also if there's an element of sensationalism to do with the health, you know, perhaps using certain words that are going to perhaps force you to take action in a certain direction, words that are there to scare you. So without sort of any reassurance or any empathy or any clarification that this might not apply to everyone. So I think if you start seeing information like this, this would be a cue that perhaps this might not be the most credible information. And also, if the rationale for the information that you're being given is not explained, you know, you don't need to be medical to understand the information that's given. That's on the healthcare professional to break it down into simple terms so that it's actually understandable and digestible. So you should be able to follow the rationale of why, you know, this information is the way it is. And I think that's really important that if you find yourself sort of really lost and you can't follow what's going on, that might be a sign that you need to check other sources as well, just to corroborate that information. And, you know, we have in healthcare, we say that we say that the doctor is the expert of medicine, but the patient is the expert of their own body. Right. So listen to how you're feeling as well. And try to put that information in context of how you're feeling, and definitely go and follow up with your doctor.
What did I not ask you that you think is important for our audience to consider?
What we're seeing with this increase in consumption of health content online is an incredible opportunity for the clinicians out there to have more impact than they would be able to otherwise, but also to have a creative outlet. And so they have the opportunity to explore these types of avenues, which medicine doesn't allow you to. You do have to be quite prescriptive and rigidly stick to the clinical guidelines and protocols when you're practicing medicine. But I think that the opportunity that clinician creators have to explore that creative outlet and that other side of their brain is I think very exciting for them. And it's part of why we're seeing such an increase in the amount of content that's available online, because of the value I think it brings to these clinicians in different ways as well.
Yeah, I think I'll add to that. What I wanted to say is, you asked previously about how we make sure that the information is sort of accurate and up to date, but also it's important that it's comprehensible, so that it's, you know, simplified in such a way that an audience that doesn't necessarily have medical knowledge and may not even speak English as their first language, that they are able to understand that information. And, you know, the part about YouTube, which Vishal has just mentioned, that creative outlet, I think you can really use that to your advantage when you're trying to create health information that's engaging. So, for example, you'll notice that in some of my videos, there's Barbie makes an appearance. And, you know, she'll often do that when there are topics that are maybe particularly sensitive, just because it makes it less intimidating and easier to talk about. And, you know, I try to keep that kind of style of relatability and fun in terms of the education, but without compromising on the quality of the education and the professionalism, which I think is really important. So definitely there is that scope of using YouTube in that way that you perhaps wouldn't be able to do in a traditional consultation.
As a consumer, though, this could be overwhelming. The amount of, you know, information out there, how would you suggest someone approach their search, if you will?
You're right, it can be overwhelming. And I think perhaps for some individuals, it depends on the individual. So for some individuals, they may prefer to start their search with maybe well-recognized organizations. So that will be country specific. So perhaps the organizations that are held as authoritative sources, health organizations, and then perhaps from there move on to maybe individual creators. And that gives you the opportunity to be able to kind of compare the information that you're being given as well. So that can be helpful. For some, they actually prefer individual creators because of that perhaps less corporate angle on the information that's being given, and also the relatability that you can find there. But as much as it can be overwhelming, I think it also has benefits, because it means that you have this breadth of information that you can compare and access. And I think it all helps in terms of when you're evaluating which information to take on board and which to, you know, to perhaps steer clear of.
Okay, so my last question to both of you, and I'll start with you, Vishal, is what is at least one action step a consumer can take in terms of advice about how they get their health information?
I would say make use of the health shelves that we have recently launched on YouTube. It's a great place to access expert, credible information. And if you're not finding what you were looking for there, then hopefully, you know, the searches that you're entering, which are not resulting in information in due course, will be the gaps that Dr. Simi and others are trying to address and plug. But you know, I think there's a wealth of information available on those YouTube health shelves when you're searching for content online.
I would say use the information that's there to complement your discussions with your doctor. So the information is a great, that, you know, the online space can be a great place to learn, for example, what is the lingo that your doctor's using, you know, that you can sometimes find confusing and perhaps you don't want to ask at the time in the consultation. So you can learn about that, and then you can really make the best use of the time that you have with your doctor, because they complement each other.
Well, thank you both so much for your time and your expertise. This was really great information, and I really appreciate you being with me today.
Thank you.
No worries. Thanks very much, Mitzi.
You can find Dr. Simi on YouTube Health, and correction from what I said during our intro, she actually has more than 2 million subscribers. I'm sure after hearing her today, you can understand why. I hope you gained some insight on how to judge the health information you get anywhere online, including social media. You know, we make a special effort here at Beyond the Paper Gown. You heard the word credible used during our conversation. Well, our tagline and goal is to bring you candid, credible, and curated information. And we do that by inviting experts in the field and calling out when information may be outside the mainstream. We value your trust, and getting you that credible information is our priority. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on how we're doing and your experiences with your health information search. You can leave a comment on our Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and yes, YouTube short or channel. You can also post on our website forum, and while you're there, please subscribe to our newsletter so we can update you on our latest podcast and share current news about women's health. And wherever you do listen to us, please leave us a rating or review. It helps us get noticed. Thanks, as always, for listening, and take good care. Our podcast was produced by Patrick Shambiati and me, and our associate producer is Kyla McMillian.
If you enjoy podcasts like this, you should check out our other shows on Health Podcast Network. For example, Highway to Health Podcast, hosted by Jeremy Quinby, provides guidance, quality resources, and inspiration for anyone seeking wellness in mind, body, and spirit. There's an episode that you should check out called The Value of Our Emotions, where Jeremy helps listeners understand the role emotions serve and what we can learn about our present state by staying attuned to them. Check out Highway to Health Podcast on your favorite podcast platform or visit healthpodcastnetwork.com.